situation to another, jumping into it, expecting that you'll change everybody else to suit yourself once you get in there. Instead, you will look at the situation from the outside before you enter it and determine whether or not the nature of these individuals in there is such that you will have a compatible relationship. You will realize that you don't control anyone else, and so you won't be expecting to change them to suit yourself. So you won't find yourself moving from many environments because you will have gotten into the right environment in the first place. So as we've seen, there's many subtle ways in which you can trap yourself into thinking you're going to control someone else's actions, when your proper course of action should be to recognize these individuals as they are in advance, check in advance and find out what they are and what they naturally want, and then determine whether you should even be in that situation to begin with. We also touched on fallacy number 12 last week, which is the attempt to trap others. You agreed to this and that sort of thing. This is where you attempt to corner someone else through logic or otherwise so that he will have to go along with you. Or you may put him in the position where he feels he has to agree with you in public because to disagree would have adverse consequences or something of the sort. This also includes trying to tie someone else down to a contract that you know he may not fully understand and then say you agreed to it. Even if he fully understood what you were doing at the time, but he now sees it as being a mistake or unprofitable to him, you're making a mistake if your approach to it is simply, well, you agreed to it. Included here is any form of coercion, too, where you force the individual, either directly or through the government, to do your bidding. Just because you feel you have the temporary power to make him do it does not necessarily mean it will be profitable to you in the long run to follow through on it. Because in all of these examples, you're not going to accomplish what you want. The individual is not going to perform his end of the bargain in the most enthusiastic way possible. He's only going to do what is necessary to just barely get by. And what do you think is going to happen the very next time he has any choice in the matter at all? Obviously, he'll choose away from you. Trapping others also overlooks the fact that these people you want to associate with out there will see this and recognize you as not the best kind of person in the world to deal with, and this will not be the best kind of advertising for yourself. There's no point in trying to trap anyone at any time. Perhaps the easiest way to fall into this trap is in marriage or in a business partnership. In that case, you feel that if you can demonstrate to the other person that you didn't hear his desires or that you weren't aware of them, then you're under no obligation to abide by them. Well, I didn't know that that was what you wanted or whatever. But you should make it your business to find out what those desires are. Otherwise, the relationship will not be very profitable to that other person and it will be terminated soon enough. And you're saying that, well, I didn't know that that was what you wanted won't make any difference. The other person didn't get what he wanted, so he will look for a better alternative where he does get what he wants. Remember, a justifiable position, as we described it last week, is not the object. A truly mutually profitable exchange is. And here is the 13th and last decision-making fallacy, one that has always annoyed me, and one which perhaps I still don't communicate my thoughts on in the best possible way because I think I still create needless arguments, but that is the so-called power of positive thinking. You can do it if you just believe you can. Now, this term, as I indicated, is one that has been used to cover a multitude of different meanings, some good and some bad. But I believe that even the good connotations have been overrated and that the bad ones are positively dangerous. Now, recognize that I'm talking about a particular kind of concept that I have seen labeled as positive thinking in the marketplace, and that's what I'm referring to. And if that is not what you think of positive thinking, then just for the moment, take my vocabulary as it is because I'm doing the talking and decide that I'm not talking about the thing that you like as positive thinking. If I do touch upon what you like as it, then consider whether or not you think what I'm saying makes sense to you. But let's look at the good side of it first. Obviously, if I walk into your office with a smile on my face and enthusiasm in my voice, you're more likely to hear what I have to say. The same thing applies when I'm giving a lecture like this. If I got up here and talked in a monotone at the bottom of my voice or stood to the wall and faced the wall, you would probably only hear 1% of all I say. But this way, by speaking out like this, you hear close to 5 or 6%, and the averages go up tremendously. No, I'm convinced that that's not the case. Somebody once said it was well over 10. The point is, of course, that my attitude will increase the possibility that someone else will hear what I'm saying, in which case it will be more likely that they may buy in the future. So I may use positive thinking as the means of getting the smile on my face and the enthusiasm in my voice. Outside of your office, for instance, I may say to myself, there's no reason to be afraid of this man. I can handle the sale whichever way it goes. I can take care of myself, and I know that my life is not dependent upon this. I will make